All right, so we have Evan here, and we have Mad Joe.
Good afternoon.
Hello. Yeah, it is 3:51 p.m., and you're listening to Radio Statler. So Evan is involved heavily with retro computing, among other things. Why don't you tell us a bit about yourself, Evan?
Sure. I'm 41 from New Jersey, and I'm a nerd.
Okay. And what's your role in retro computing?
So I am a collector, and there's a whole lot of people out there, the retro computing hobby worldwide. People who are collectors and restorers of computers in, say, the 50s to the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Very analogous to, say, the antique car hobby. And just like those guys, we collect them, fix them up, take them out for Sunday drives, you know. Some people are saying they're better modern computers, but for the most part, we just, you know, we're not saying seriously to use them as a retro computer. Some of us are, but most of us just do it for fun and education.
Okay.
And so I'm president of a 501c3 nonprofit called the Vintage Computer Federation, Inc., and we do four things. We have a national event series called the Vintage Computer Festival. There are shows in New Jersey, California, and we have partner shows in Atlanta, Chicago, Munich, Germany, UK, and we're growing all over. We own the largest discussion site on the internet for our hobby called mm-hmm. the Vintage Computer Forum.
Okay.
So we have Vintage Computer Festival, Vintage Computer Forum, or Vintage Computer Federation. We're trying to incubate local chapters. Our founding chapter is here in the Mid-Atlantic US area, and we're partnering with other existing groups like that chapter and trying to incubate new chapters. And then we have our own museum as well in New Jersey, a hands-on restoration-focused museum. And so that's what we do. We exist for and by the hobby, you know, for and by vintage computing hobbyists. And we're trying to be sort of a, I wouldn't say governing body, no, I mean, that would be arrogant, but we're trying to sort of be represent hobbyists as a real organization, not
yeah.
just an online.
So I saw that you had a booth here at Hope as well.
As we always do, it's a blast. We love coming to this event. Yeah, a lot of fun.
What kind of computers do you have there right now that are really stand out to you?
So this year we only brought two computers. We brought a Commodore 64 and a Compaq 386 Luggable.
Okay.
And we brought those not because those computers are so special. Our theme this year is 80s computer robotics. Lots of people today do computer robotics, but they didn't do it back in the 80s or 70s. So we have a Commodore 64 from 1982 powering a Capsella robot kit,
mm-hmm.
With gears and motors and stuff. And then we have a Compaq 386 from 1987 connected to a Lego kit also from 87. Lego actually made a robotics interface, and there's opto sensors and lights and motors. So one of my colleagues, Jeff, is focusing on the Commodore side. I was doing the IBM, the Compaq side with BASIC, and I was making a video game.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Here on the show floor. Well, it was supposed to be ready for the show, but it wasn't. So now I'm making it here on the show floor, which turns out the audience likes better. The audience visitors seem more impressed that we're making something on the floor than here's something polished and done to play with.
That's usually the case at the Hackers Conference. Yeah.
And it's not even like working, but no one cares. That's the fun part. And then we're going to recycle part of the same idea for Maker Faire in a couple months.
That's really cool.
Am I allowed to say that? Can I say that?
You can say whatever you want.
Yeah. We're free.
Can I drop an F-bomb? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want.
I mean, it's not compulsory, but you can, like, yeah, no, it's fine.
It has to feel the moment. I have to feel it.
Yeah. Exactly. So, retro computing. I'm not really all that well-versed in it.
But here's the thing. You're a computer geek like me, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So here's the reason I ask that is, if you take 100 people off the street, most people, 99 of them are not into cars, but they're aware of them.
Yeah.
You know, whereas 100 people street, you know, probably 80 or 90 of them are aware that there are antique car people. Or if you say, hey, did you know that there's people collect old cars? Yeah, I guess, you know, basically. They've seen old hot rods around. Whereas if I ask 100 IT geeks, half of them say, well, why would I want an old computer if I can have a new one?
Well,
I don't get that. I don't grok that. So we're trying to change that.
So, try to convince me. Why would I really like old computers, older computers?
Well, the official story is you do it for education and you know, teach kids.
Well, that's of course, I can see that. Yeah.
Nostalgia, fun. A lot of us just like to collect. So there's different kinds of collectors.
Mm-hmm.
There's some of us who just collect whatever we had as kids, just to reminisce.
Oh, just the nostalgia factor.
Have the same machine I had as a kid, right?
Yeah.
Some of us collect machines that we couldn't get as kids, the ones you always wanted, your parents wouldn't buy you,
mm-hmm.
or you couldn't afford. And some of us are not so much collectors, but to use a computer term, some of us are accumulators. People who are not collectors, but they don't know they're collectors. They just never got rid of stuff. And everything, they're involved.
Sorry?
That's me. I accumulate. I don't have anything old because I'm young, but that's me.
Okay, yeah.
So, my personal interests, I'm really into historic laptops and pocket computers and stuff. So I used to have this insane collection. I sold most of it. The only one I still own is an Apple IIe Platinum because that's the computer I had when I was 13.
Oh, yes.
That's the computer I learned basic on.
Yeah.
So I have one now just because I want one, But I run a museum, so I have an incredible collection. So our museum in New Jersey, we have not the largest collection on the East Coast, but we have the most comprehensive collection on the East Coast. The Smithsonian has an incredible collection, which you can't see. And there's a couple groups, in Rhode Island and Boston, that have great collections, focusing on very few specific things. Etc. There are some private collections on the East Coast that are very, very impressive, but they're one man's collection. So our group we're a public nonprofit, and we have everything from 1950s mainframes, custom built one of a kind stuff, Univac and Bendix and stuff, all the way up to 60s minis, 70s homebrew stuff, and every 80s micro you can dream of, and with some exceptions for things newer and older. And we're all about getting them running.
Okay, yeah.
Not just garage queens.
Yeah, that's gonna be kind of tough because a lot of those companies that build those computers aren't in business anymore. So how do you get the spare parts?
Well, for some of the smaller, more common stuff, it's have seven of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right now my group has 1,200 square feet of exhibit space and 7,000 square feet of storage.
Okay.
For some of the older things from the 50s and 60s, you have to fix or make. It's a challenge and it's a lot of fun. For example, MIT, you've heard of George Philbrick, the op amp guy, right? Mr. Philbrick is kind of the father of op amps. And his company, Philbrick Researches, it was called, would custom build computers. Every computer was bespoke. And MIT, the university, ordered one of his computers for their mechanical engineering lab in 1958 as mm-hmm. a teaching tool for the students. They use that computer as an analog computer. It's four racks of analog computer. And they used it to 1970. And then it was decommissioned and sold to an alumni who took it with him to his home in Ohio for 40 years. Sat in his garage. His wife said, get this bleeping thing out of here. He called the MIT Museum and said, don't you want this computer? And they said, call those guys in Jersey.
Okay.
So we got it. And we're going to try to power it up and run it. Now, it's very important to tell listeners, if someone gives you a Commodore 64 or TRS-80, sure, plug it in, see what happens.
Yeah.
If it breaks, we fix it. When someone gives you a 1958 four-rack analog computer,
yeah, don't just plug
or
it in.
A Cray or a Univac, all of which we have, you don't just plug it in and see what happens. You spend years lovingly restoring it. If someone says, hey, I have this old car from the 80s, okay, turn it on, see if it works.
Yeah.
If someone says, hey, I got this Duesenberg in the garage, in the barn. Well, hold on a second. You don't just turn on a Duesenberg. So we do both sides of that.
Okay.
And we also do a lot of repair workshops where every couple of months our members come out from a couple states around, bring their own stuff and bring work on our stuff too, and we collaboratively fix stuff. If someone new shows up, say, what did you grow up on? I brought my TRS-80. Great. Let us sit down with the TRS-80 expert and teach you how to fix it.
That's actually really cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we actually have an IRC channel, so people are actually they're listening and interacting, and they actually have some questions lined up.
Oh, awesome! Yeah.
So the first one, they've been asking this a lot today. What is your favorite drink?
Alcoholic or in general?
Anything.
Really.
Anything.
Yeah.
Like if you had to drink one thing for the rest of your life, what would you drink?
Dihydrogen monoxide.
Water's good. That's good.
Good old fashioned Coke. I went to my aunt's house for a holiday, and she heard I like Coke, so she got vanilla Coke and cherry Coke and Coke Zero, and I just want a fucking Coke. alcoholic, black and tan, Smithwick's, Samuel Smith from Britain. It's good stuff. Guinness.
Yeah.
I like Black and Tan, I guess.
It's good stuff.
I'm a dark beer guy. There's a great Jersey story that, how does this go? God said first it was light, and the light was good, and then it was draft, and it was good too. What does American beer have in common with sex in a boat?
It's fucking close to water.
Yeah.
We also have, what do you think about geeks as opposed to nerds?
I have no opinion on that. I'm probably both. I have no opinion on that matter. One thing I like is when I formed this computer group 12 years ago, it was the first time in my life where I wasn't the outcast. Because compared to these guys, I was the normal one. Yeah. I mean, I was an English major.
So, oh, wow. Yeah.
Not ashamed to admit that. I was an English major, and compared to some of these guys. On the other hand, though, it is actually pretty impressive how normal. I mean, most of us have families and children, regular jobs and other hobbies and just sports, and we go to the gym. So we're not just a bunch of guys in our parents' basement. And
Have you seen Bedroom to Billions, a film from the UK?
Never heard of it.
Neither have I, actually.
Yeah, me neither. So I guess that's a no.
I'll go home and Google it, though.
Yeah.
You tell me.
We can take a look. And then what is your favorite Commodore 64 game out there? Do you have a favorite?
No, because I grew up on an Apple II. I was an Apple II kid.
Oh,
okay,
I see.
What's your favorite Apple II game then?
Yeah.
Since asked, this is really obscure and totally corny. Keep in mind the context of I was 10. But there was a game called Swashbuckler.
Okay.
Where it's like a sword fighting game you saw. And my mom had a friend whose daughter worked for Epix. So I used to get all the summer games, Olympic games, winter games. She'd bring home all those games for me, all the Olympic stuff, you know. On my Apple II, I didn't really do a lot of gaming. I would write BASIC, you know. I was first exposed to desktop publishing on Apple II and Newsroom, word processing, flight sim. But I used to play more gaming-wise and still own my Atari 2600.
Okay.
Hooked onto a big screen, I guess 50-inch TV now, you know. But I can tell you my favorite Atari games, that's easy. My favorite Atari game is The Empire Strikes Back, where you fly a speeder on Hoth. And you have to shoot the AT-ATs.
Oh, that sounds like
I love
fun.
That game.
Sounds
if
awesome.
If you hit you have to hit each AT-AT like 40 times to kill it, but you can't win. It's a high score game. You can't win. And if you hit it in just the right spot, then you get the force, and you have a few minutes where they can't kill you, and you can just shoot at them, and you can't do anything about it. It's a fun game. And I think the rarest Atari game I own is Spy Hunter, because everyone thinks they didn't make it for the 2600, but I have it.
Okay.
And so the retro gaming community dwarfs the retro computing community.
Oh, man.
It's a huge hobby. They have like professional shows at professional conference centers. They have shows of tens of thousands of people.
Yeah.
They have massive shows. They rent out huge convention halls. They're a much bigger hobby than us. But obviously, it just makes sense that when we do demos, we do a lot of gaming because a lot of gaming just makes sense.
Yeah, because it appeals to people,
Actually, speaking about gaming, do you talk with Telemonster very much at all?
Yeah, Ethan, he's one of us.
You're
a member of a group.
So how related are you guys with... So MAGFest has a room set aside for retro computing. How related are you guys to that?
Telemonster had asked us to help out with that.
Yeah.
It just hasn't worked out for us logistically. But we're not related to them.
I knew you guys weren't related.
But, I mean, we've been invited. We just haven't got around to it.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that.
We also, I mean, we don't want to have an arcade and babysit. We don't want to go there and just set up a bunch of computers and babysit for the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
We want to teach and show people how computers work and dev and what they did beside gaming. We don't want to just set up an arcade and make sure no one screws it up all weekend. I mean, that's kind of boring for us.
Well, yeah.
We like to game as much as anybody, but we don't want to just babysit.
I think you could probably, I don't know, we should take this offline, I would think.
Okay. No offense to MAGFest.
No, there's no offense taken.
Like we used to have an Atari, and you know, we have Atari computers, of course. We used to have an Atari set up in a museum just for shits and giggles. And we got to take it down, because families come to the museum, and their parents say, oh, yeah, kids, just go play Atari. I'm going to walk around the museum for a couple hours.
No, you got to take the kids with you so that they can be instilled
we're not
the interest.
Care.
But, I mean, I don't know. I actually haven't gotten a chance to check out the museum that they have at MAGFest, but one would think that the arcade is in a different part of the building.
Okay.
So if you want to play arcade games, you can do that, and if you want to go look at retro computers and learn about them, you would go there.
Good to know.
That would make sense, yeah.
Could do that.
Yeah. Anyway, any other questions from IRC? Whatever happened to March?
Okay, so there was a user group called March, Mid-Atlantic Retro Computing Hobbyist. Excuse me. And so that group was a user group that I founded in like 2004.
Mm-hmm.
It existed in 2015. It was strictly a local, you know, regional user group. Our membership was from, say, Hartford to Pittsburgh to D.C.-ish. And it was great. It was very, very successful for a user group. And last fall, we decided to expand our horizons. And we just, various legal stuff I won't get into, we decided to disband March and form a brand new organization called the Vintage Computer Federation, Inc., which is a 501c3 nonprofit. It would have been too complicated to become that group. We just disbanded and start over. So the very first thing, so March was legally disbanded. I signed the paperwork at midnight. 1201 VCF was formed. And the very 1202, the first thing VCF did was form a Mid-Atlantic chapter. And the Mid-Atlantic chapter of VCF, by pure coincidence, if the IRS is listening, by pure coincidence, the first thing it did was have a museum and a bunch of members, which may have been the same ones as in March.
Sounds
so
good.
March is dead. Long live March.
My understanding is, actually, we were talking earlier before we came on, you have written a book that is out now, available from your website, and...
Yeah, thanks for asking. So I mentioned earlier, I really like the history of laptops and portable computers and stuff. So one day in 2002-ish, I was in a bookstore up in Boston with a friend. I was doodling on my Palm Pilot, and I was wondering, where this came from, you know? Went home and Yahooed, because you couldn't Google back then.
Okay.
And, well, I don't know if Google might have existed, but no one did it then. And I looked at, you know, history of PDAs, and, oh, Apple Newton and stuff, okay, fine. And I quickly learned that wasn't the whole story. That was actually the tip of the iceberg. And then I realized there's a lot more in portable computing than just PDAs, right? There's laptops, and there were schleptops, you know, the suitcase computers. I like schleptop from the 80s and 70s.
I like that. That's good.
My friend Hans Franke, who runs VCF Munich, taught me that term, schleptop. I liked it a lot. And then before that, in the 60s, there were, honest to gosh, mini computers, things the size of a desk with handles on both sides, and advertisements in magazines like Fortune and Forbes magazine showing guys in hard hats, one on each side, carrying it onto the field to a construction site. And in the 50s, the U.S. Army and IBM and stuff were designing mainframes expressly to go into tractor trailers and move them around the field.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned in my talk this morning, it was my favorite computer was Moby Dick. Moby Dick was mobile digital computer. Mobile meant 2 30-foot trailers. And laugh if you want. I understand why it's funny. But for the first time ever, a computer could go where the problem was instead of the problem being brought back to where the computer was.
That is impressive.
And when the computer is a data center at Harvard and the problem is a battlefield in France or Germany or something, that's really important.
Yes.
Yeah. And that, now, here's my favorite twist. That computer was built at the former secret Army research lab, which is now the site of our museum.
Oh, wow.
Cool twist.
That's a cool twist.
There were six of them ever made, and we have a little board of transistors from one of them.
So it's back home now.
It's back home now.
All right. Cool.
And being good engineers, they were Army guys, but being good engineers, they called it Moby Dick, biggest whale. And there's a great story. I interviewed some of the engineers who worked on it in the 50s. And they said they want to take it to Europe, and the Army said, well, hold on, it's a new computer, it's also a new Army truck. Every Army vehicle, by policy, must be driven down to Aberdeen, Maryland, the proving ground, take it on the test track, where there's grenades and potholes, people shooting you, to make sure your vehicle can withstand the rigors of war. So they took it on two laps at a famous Munson Road test course at Aberdeen Proving Ground. Both laps, the computer came through with flying colors. Both laps, the truck broke down. So they figured it's easier to beef up a truck than redesign the computer. So they did that, and they drove from around Europe for 10 years. It was great.
Wow, that's really interesting.
And at the end of it, one of the engineers who helped assemble it for Sylvania as a contractor wrote a paper in the 80s for the IEEE Annals in History of Computing.
Yeah.
And he said, other than the fact that the hardware was obsolete, we would have kept using it if we could have. It was a great system.
Yeah. That is actually pretty awesome.
So my book is called Abacus. I forgot to mention the name of the book.
Yeah.
I was just going to ask.
It's called Abacus to Smartphone. So abacus2smartphone.com. Or you can go on my personal website, which is snarc.net, and it links back to it. You can buy it from Amazon or whatever. So.
And then there's one last question from Retinox. He says, and what about Salem Ismail?
Yeah, okay. So Salem Ismail is a consultant in Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. Started out as a telecom consultant and programmer. And he's the guy who in 97 founded the Vintage Computer Festival.
Okay.
He didn't call it the VCF West because there was no other ones then.
Yeah.
So he founded it. And over the years, throughout the late 90s, early to mid-2000s, other people with his permission started doing other VCFs. So the former March group, we had VCF East, and then the guys in Germany at VCF Europa, et cetera, et cetera. In 2007 was the last time Salam ran VCF West after 10 shows. And he had personal issues, personal business to attend to. So he kind of got out of that. And my organization, when we became a nonprofit, we went to him and said, hey, you know, we're in a position now to bring it back, you know, if you let us. And so we had the rights to VCF East, but now we've acquired the show.
Okay.
VCF West. And now Salam will be at VCF West in a couple weeks, August 6th and 7th, in Computer History Museum, California. He'll be there as our honored guest, but he's no longer involved in ownership or management. He's just our sort of founder emeritus now. I think what people really want to know is what happened to him, why he dropped the ball, and I can't talk about that. But it's back. The show's back, which is what he wanted. And it's all good. He's our friend, so it's all good.
All right. Are there any other questions from IRC? Type them into it quick.
It's a little bit of a delay.
Yeah. I think there's like a 5 minute.
They're on 300 baud modems.
Yeah.
So go to your teletype machines. go to your ASR33s. Type in some questions. We'll read them a character at a time as they arrive.
While we wait, is there anything else that you feel like you need to mention?
Well, our website for the Federation is vcfed.org, and that's where you can find all our social media. And please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and all that jazz.
Of course.
We are a little nonprofit. Take all the help we can get.
Yeah.
As a nonprofit, all donations are tax deductible.
That's good to know, yeah.
Yeah, and hope rocks. We'll see you at Maker Faire in a couple weeks, a couple months.
Sounds good. Thank you for stopping by.
All right.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
All right. We're going to put on some music while we wait for our next content to start. Thank you for tuning in to Radio Statler.